Welcome to ITB Berlin's Travel Hero Podcast, the place where we explore the ideas, innovations, and leaders shaping the future of global travel. I'm Charlotte Lamb Davies with management consultancy A Bright Approach. I'm your host, and our guest today is someone whose work sits at the intersection of tourism, conservation, education, and global biodiversity. It's Christoph Kiesling, who's Vice President of Loro Park, and Christoph leads one of the world's most admired zoological institutions and a foundation that has become a powerhouse in species protection worldwide. Christoph, very, very warm welcome to you to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this important podcast. I feel honored.
We are delighted to have you with us today. But before we dive into the detail, I am very curious to know a little bit about yourself and your journey into the Loro Park Group.
Well, my CV is a little different than of others, to say it like this, because I grew up in a zoological garden. So my father, he inaugurated Loro Park as a parrot park back in 1972 in Puerto La Cruz on the Canary Islands. This was the growing touristic destination on the Canary Islands, and my father thought we should do a complimentary offer to hotels and for tourists. So at the beginning, he thought where to go and to establish, which is a safari park. But once he recognized, after my grandfather asked him if he would be aware of the cost for big animals to be fed, so he considered, after the recommendation of my grandfather, to make it with parrots, because they live for 100 years and they just eat a handful of seeds. So the idea was born to do a parrot park. Once my father started on a small surface of 13,000 square meters with about 125 parrots, the company and the zoo grew. And I was, as a kid, I was part of this, so I could see the development of that zoo. And I could be related to animals from my very young age onwards.
Well, I can even hear the birds in the background as we speak. Normally, we don't allow much noise on this podcast, but that noise I am loving. So if people can listen out for that, I think that's really quite marvelous. You know, how did the idea to combine a zoo with a dedicated foundation for species conservation really sort of come about? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there were two different approaches. One approach is once you have animals and you feel responsible for these animals, you might travel to the countries where they originally came from. So my father, he was invited to Brazil, where there was a presentation for the Spix macaw in Curaçao at the Village Theater. And the people, they explained the difficulties for the species, which was on the edge of extinction, and finally it got extinct in the wild. And each time they said, we need a car, they looked at my father. They said, we need an aviary, they looked at my father. We need a car, they looked at my father. So my father understood the importance they have to be supported monetarily. On the other side, in those days, let's call it, it was the beginning of the 90s, my father visited in Switzerland the CITES office. And at the CITES office, the responsible director was Obdulio Mengi. And he said to my father, you have to be aware that every day the question of conservation is more important. And since you have the biggest parrot collection in the world, why don't you donate your parrot collection to a foundation and you dedicate to the conservation work in situ? To explain it, in situ means in the habitat, ex situ would be at the conservation center like at Loro Park. So my father, he established a foundation which is inscripted in Spain. So it's actually, it's a Spanish foundation belonging to the Spanish state. It's not our property, but we manage the foundation. And since Loro Park is the main sponsor for the foundation, because all the donations we get, they go directly into conservation work, and all the cost for the foundation is covered by Loro Park. So we are 100% foundation, and every dollar or every euro we get goes directly to benefit animals in the wild.
That is naturally wonderful, because the park emerged from a zoo, and you know, some might see a contradiction, if you like, in protecting animals while keeping them in captivity. But you have alerted us, or you have kind of guided us in this direction already. But I mean, how are things approached from your perspective? Because they're two sides, really, aren't they?
Well, first of all, we wouldn't say captivity. That's number one. We would say in human care. If you understand, or if you want to look at the evolution of humankind on planet Earth, so you have to consider that our population grew more than 100% in 50 years. 50 years ago, we had 4 billion people on planet Earth. Now we have 8.3 billion people. Considering that the land size is just 30% of the blue planet, so we know that by the demand for space, for agriculture, for housing, for infrastructure, for humankind, nature got restricted. It got reduced in an incredible speed. And in that speed, nature was not able to move away from that urbanization. That means where nature was eliminated, the species were eliminated. And that led us to the sixth mass extinction. So nowadays, we're living the sixth mass extinction. Nowadays, we're losing six species per hour, 140, 150 species every day, extinct forever. So if we wonder, when was the fifth mass extinction? So it was 60 million years ago, when the meteorite hits planet Earth and the dinosaurs got extinct. And since then, we were living in a biological balance. But due to the presence of humans and to the expansion, the urbanization of humans, there is little space left for nature and for their inhabitants, the different species, the biodiversity. So if there wouldn't be zoos nowadays, who would take care of the species? Where could we meet the species? How could we enrich people's life and interest to dedicate their life to understand, to study species, and to help them ex situ and in situ? So the zoo, and therefore education, is very important. Therefore, so many families come with their kids to the zoo to see the animals at the zoo. And when you come with your kids, this is the beginning of opening your mind towards to different species, different sizes, colors. And then we can create, which is the next generation of biologists, vets, scientists, or simply animal and nature lovers. So the zoo is the only space where you have in a controlled environment animals, so that the science have access, the public has access, and those animals, they lead like ambassadors for the species. And like this, we can make the bridge, studying the species, learning about the species, and transferring our knowledge to the species which are in need in the environment, in situ.
But I'm wondering something around, you know, the many projects that you do that rely on cooperation. And how do you work with local communities to ensure that there is this meaningful and lasting impact of the work that you do? Could you share that with us?
Yes. Well, there are different approaches. First of all, you should never send an intelligent person from your institution to the different countries. What you have to do is you have to look for university, local university. You have to find people which are interested at the university to supervise a project. And then you look for a local NGO so that you can finance the local NGO to do the work under the supervision and collaboration with the local university. And then you have the people which live on that habitat, and they have their families living on that habitat. And if you have one of them defending, which is the species' rights and interests, then you have the whole family working together. And this is the way how we achieve to be with the different projects. We have 67 projects in 37 countries this year. We have done up to 300 projects in the last 30 years. And what is very important is we believe we can educate kids. We have to sensibilize the adults. We have to involve which are the local politicians so that we re-enhance which is their culture. You can't ask them to stop doing something. What you have to do is you have to give them money. You have to give them the possibilities that they can continue with all the tradition and culture. And at the same time, you start educating the kids so that they know how to combine, which is respect for the species, for the environment, and go on with the tradition and with the culture. And today, for example, in Bolivia, where we teach them to do artificial feathers for their tocado. Tocado is a decoration for their head when they do the dance with the machete, with the big knife. Since more than 20 years, none of the macaws, the blue-throated macaws in Benin, in the flatland of Bolivia, is being caught and the feathers ripped off for this tocado. Because we teach since 98 at all schools, there are 200 schools in the Benin and the flatland, to do artificial feathers. So we are now in the second generation of artificial feathers within the folk, within the people. And we are very proud of this type of work. But we can go on. All the projects, they have the different tasks. And it's always important to understand what do the people need in their region, because they don't know about the big world. They know about their local cosmos. And within their local cosmos, you have to understand them, help them. And when you help them, you say, you have to help me. Stop deforestation. Stop using glyphosate, which is a plant killer, no? A chemical plant killer. In combination of this, you offer them something they are demanding, they need it, and then you have a sustainable growth together with the communities.
Wonderful. Well, there's nothing like education. This is living proof, and this is obviously how you move the needle. Whilst I still have you, I want to get back and talk a little bit more about Loro Park, because it is one of the most visited attractions, I happen to know, in the Canary Islands. And how significant is its role really to Tenerife as a travel destination?
Well, nowadays, travel destinations, they need the complimentary offer. That means when we started in Puerto La Cruz, or when tourism started here, it was tourism for health reasons. Out of health reasons, people came over and said, well, it's actually the climate. From the climate, it went to the beach and sun tourism. And once we had all of this established, people were looking for more entertainment. So nowadays, if you look at Orlando, Las Vegas, Macau, or if you look wherever you want to go, Paris, it is about the complimentary offer. So for a destination nowadays, it's very important to have this complimentary offer and not just the infrastructure for hotels, apartments, and restaurants. On the other side, the climb on the Canary Islands, which is that good, is the perfect spot to have animals, exotic animals, subtropical animals. So they feel very comfortable here. You don't have to create the climber so that they feel comfortable. And people love nature. People nowadays, most of them, they live in cities. Most of them, they live far away from all these animals. And it's very difficult for them to actually have a trip to Africa or have a trip to call it to South America or go on wherever on the planet. It's very expensive to see animals in a nature spot, in a nature reserve. So a zoological garden is very entertaining. It's educational. There are moments when you see the animals, this is always something different. It's not reproducing. It's not like every day the same. And this is what people love, to meet nature and to have that special moment, creating special memories. We are a well-demanded attraction here, but it's also an important cultural offer.
I think my next question, I'm quite hopeful it's going to be a yes, but I would love to know if there are any particular species that has been saved from extinction thanks to your wonderful work in the foundation.
Oh, yes, we saved 18 species from extinction. And this is something we're very proud of, because not every conservation center has that record. And especially there are lots of organizations which are claiming that animals, as you said at the very beginning, they live here in captivity against their will, which is not like this. Animals, they need to be understood in conservation centers like ours, and we then can help. So, for example, in Brazil, just in Brazil, we saved four species, like the Lear macaw or like the Amazona brasilensis. So you have to imagine the Amazonas Brasiliensis has the name of Brazil, and the zoo from Tenerife, from the Canary Islands in Spain, has to go to Brazil to save their own species with the name of Brazil. We are very proud of this. But we also saved the pechigris, or like in Brazil, they call it the cara suja, the dirty face, they call it. It's translated from the Portuguese to the English. We have other species like from Indonesia, like the goffin kakadu. We have the blue-throated macaw in Bolivia. We have the yellow-eared parakeet in Colombia. We also have the Amazonas barbadensis in Venezuela. Now we have over 10,000 of them flying in nature again. We have the Cuban Amazon. We have the parakeet from Mauricio, from the island of Mauricio. We have other from Peru, from Caledonia, in Colombia, the blue-headed parrot in Colombia. So we have from Africa, we have the agraponis in Zambia, which, thanks to our work, got protected. And
This is worldwide. This is wonderful, Christoph. Yes. And when I listen to our podcast, once it goes live, I will look up all these various beautiful creatures. If we think ahead, you've touched on it already. The planet is, shall we say, somewhat crowded now. If we look at the current state of global biodiversity, is there anything that gives you hope, or are you just hopeful?
Oh, yes. If you're a father, you're always full of hope, because you're fighting on a daily basis that the beauty of this planet is conserved and it's ready for next generations. What we can see is that the Just Lower Park Foundation, with its 30 million investment in biodiversity in situ, the foundation needs much more money for its operation. But the money we got and we invested, the result are 18 species saved from extinction. This is a great result. We could stop the mass extinction on planet Earth for 3 hours. And it's us. We are from Tenerife. We are not a major institution. We are a private-owned zoological garden called Animal Embassy. And we achieved this. So if we work together, if we can combine with different areas, nations, interested people, animal-loving people, imagine what we can do. So it's very important that this networking, like on the ITB, it's not just about tourism. It's about respect. When you go out, it doesn't matter where you fly to, where you drive to, or where you get to. Be respectful with your environment. Be respectful and leave that place without leaving marks. Try to eat the local food. Try to be part of the culture and be respectful to the people, so what they do and what they think. And at the same time, if you get out into nature, never leave your rubbish out there. And if you really want to see wild animals, the best way, the most sustainable way to do that is go to your local zoo.
Christoph, before we wrap up entirely, I wonder if you might be able to share sort of one message with our lovely listeners in terms of what each of us, and you've alerted us to it also already, but what each of us can do in our daily lives to support, you know, species conservation.
Well, as I said before, sustainability is the number one, because what we are producing, 8.3 billion people, is rubbish. And rubbish is what we dump. And unfortunately, plastic is not getting away. So if you buy aluminium, for example, instead of buying a PET bottle, buy aluminium cans. Aluminium can be recycled infinitively. That means it's a product, once it's produced, it's always usable again and again and again. So that would be something, if we would leave out plastic, that would be great. So again, at the supermarket, it's easier to go to the cold corner and to buy cheese and ham wrapped up and packed in plastic. But maybe it's better to go to the station where they cut it and you get it in wax paper. And just this action, every family, if they would do something like this, that would definitely help our planet to have less rubbish and be more sustainable.
Thank you very much. We also at ITB Berlin, of course, have a huge sustainability track hosted by my colleagues on the board of experts with ITB Berlin. And this is definitely one of the messages that will be also very much supported by that entire team.
I have one more thing.
Please.
We will present on the ITB in Berlin, which is the Sea Sanctuary of Macaronesia. So Macaronesia, to explain, it starts at the Azores Islands. It goes over Madeira, Canary Islands, down to the Cape Verde Islands. And in this area, you have like the birthplace of biodiversity in the Atlantic Ocean. And we are calling out to make that a marine reserve, a sanctuary. And therefore, if we would get the support from ITB and from all visitors, exhibitors from ITB, so we would be able to create one of the biggest marine reserves on the world, which would be a great help for biodiversity in the future. We have the support of the IUCN. The IUCN on the latest World Congress called out that this is the most important project IUCN is following up right now for the short-term future. And if we would get your support as well, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
I am sure that there is going to be plenty of support, not least also from our listeners. And very sadly, I think when we spoke before we started recording, I said this goes in a heartbeat, and it has. But what a lot of wonderful insight, Christoph. It's been my absolute pleasure having you on our podcast today. Thank you.
Charlotte, thank you very much to invite me and to share the message. Thank you very much.
It's been my absolute pleasure. And to our listeners, of course, thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for more conversations with inspiring voices leading the way to a responsible and resilient future for global travel right here at the ITB Berlin Travel Hero Podcast. Safe travels.